Come unto her. Address. Lalitam. Very gently. Viraha. The hero. Savrida. With shyness. Smita. Smiling. Shobhanam.
Very beautiful.
Snigdhena. By sex desire. Apangapunkena. By the arrow of glancing. Sprishtaha. Thus pierced. Prema udramat. Exciting love. Bruvah. By the eyebrows. The translation. Paranjana, the hero, became attracted by the eyebrows and smiling face of the very beautiful girl and was immediately pierced by the arrows of her lusty desires. When she smiled shyly, she looked very beautiful to Paranjana, who, although a hero, could not refrain from addressing her. So you can repeat, Paranjana, the hero, became attracted by the eyebrows
and smiling face
of a very beautiful girl.
And was immediately pierced
by the arrows of her lusty desires.
When she smiled shyly,
she looked very beautiful to Paranjana, who, although a hero, could not refrain from addressing her. So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Every living entity is a hero in two ways. When he is a victim of the illusory energy, he works as a great hero in the material world, as a great leader, politician, businessman, industrialist, etc. And his heroic activities contribute to the material advancement of civilization. One can also become a hero by being master of the senses, a Gosami. Material activities are false heroic activities, whereas restraining the senses from material engagement is real heroism. However great a hero may be in the material world, he can be immediately conquered by the lumps of flesh and blood known as the breasts of women. In the history of material activities, there are many examples, like the Roman hero Antony, who became captivated by the beauty of Cleopatra. Similarly, a great hero in India named Bajirao became a victim of a woman during the time of the Maharashtrian politics and was defeated. From history, we understand that formerly politicians used to employ beautiful girls who were trained as Vishakonya. These girls had poison injected into their bodies from the beginning of their lives so that in due course of time, they would become so immune to the poison and so poisonous themselves that simply by kissing a person, they could kill him. These poisonous girls were engaged to see an enemy and kill him with a kiss. Thus, there are many instances in human history of heroes who have been curved simply by women. Being part and parcel of Krishna, the living entity is certainly a great hero, but due to his own weakness, he becomes attracted to the material features. Krishna bahir mukha han bhoga vancha kare nikati sta maya kare japatiya dhare. It is said in the Prema Vivarta that when a living entity wants to enjoy material nature, he is immediately victimized by the material energy. A living entity is not forced to come into the material world. He makes his own choice, being attracted by beautiful women. Every living entity has the freedom to be attracted by material nature or to stand as a hero and resist that attraction. It is simply a question of the living entities being attracted or not being attracted. There's no question of his being forced to come into contact with material energy. One who can keep himself steady and resist the attraction of material nature is certainly a hero and deserves to be called a Gosami. Unless one is master of the senses, he cannot become a Goswami. The living entity can take one of two positions in this world. He may become a servant of the senses, or he may become master of them. By becoming a servant of the senses, one becomes a great material hero. And by becoming master of the senses, he becomes a Goswami, or spiritual hero. Okay. So, tamaha lalitam vira savridas mitashobanam snigdina panga pukena sprishta premod brahman dhruva. So, om ganat simiranda shah gadanjana shilakaya chakshuru meditam yena tasmai shigurave namaha. So, this is quite an interesting verse and purport. And as Prabhupada cites some examples here of material heroes or material heroes that were conquered by lust, then there's actually more, so many examples like that. I mean, just like the previous verse, Prabhupada refers to Ravana. You know, Ravana was conquered by lust for Sita Devi. And Prabhupada gives this example of Antony and Cleopatra. And there's a similar example in the Bible. It's the story of Samson, not the mobile phone Samsung. Isn't it Samson or Sanyo or Samson? Anyway, so Samson, he had been blessed by God to be very, very powerful. In fact, he was like. He could lift up a building practically like Superman. Practically, he was so powerful, and it was something like yoga that he had, because the yogis, they generally keep the power in the hair. Just like that story of Vibhikashena, who was declaring himself to be Mahavishnu, and of course dancing with gopis in the middle of the night, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur was the only one who had the courage to arrest him, because this person was making fire from his hair, or so many things were happening because of his mystic powers. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur arrested him, put him in jail, and even then his mystic powers caused Bhaktivinoda Thakur trouble. His daughter got very sick, almost died, and he almost died the last day of the trial. I mean, he had such a high fever, and he drug himself into court, and he passed sentence upon this person. And then there was an English personality who came and cut the guy's hair off, and as soon as the guy's hair was cut off, he just collapsed to the ground. So the yogis, sometimes they keep their power in the hair. So, getting back to the point, with Samson, that he was so powerful, no one could defeat him. But there was this other group of people called the Philistines. Anyone's heard of the Philistines before? They were just like nowadays, you have the Arabs and Israelis are always at odds. So this has been going on for thousands of years. It's not just like started in the last few hundred years. So they had a plan. So they called for this beautiful lady. Her name was Delilah. Even that name is just very sensuous. Delilah. Like Leela or the Delilah. There's so many names that are very sensuous. Most of the American names are not. Like Peggy. Is not very sensuous. Or Susie, you know. But, you know, like some of these names, they're actually coming from Sanskrit. Many of them come from Sanskrit, like Leela. It's just much, much more sensuous. Ladies like to have these sensuous names. Just like one time there was someone who was taking initiation. She said, "Please give me a sensuous name when I take initiation. I don't want a name like Bhumi or anything like that, like a cow name, you know. I want it like Radha or Lalita or something." Anyway, so I didn't give her a sensuous name. I gave her a very motherly name. So this Delilah she basically attracted Samson, and they had conjugal relationship, and then while he was sleeping, she cut off his hair, and then all of his power was gone. He just became extremely weak. Then after that, it's a biblical story in the Old Testament. After that, the Philistines were able to capture him. They just tied him up and everything like that. Of course, they made a big mistake, too, that after they captured him, they didn't keep shaving his hair off. So his hair gradually grew more and more and more, and then his powers came back. They had blinded him, actually. They had taken out his eyes. So, and they tied him up in the palace where all of them were meeting. So he was tied against one of the pillars. And so gradually the hair grew back more and more and more, and his powers came, even though he was blind. And he got his powers back, and all the Philistine leaders were under this, in the castle, in the palace. And so what he did is he pushed the pillars. He had the strength to push the pillars, and the building collapsed on all of them. So he was ultimately a hero in that particular context. So, anyway, there's so many examples of this in the material world and the spiritual world. I mean, they have these ladies called Mata Haris, and that's an interesting name. Hari means Krishna. Anyway, so in World War II, you know, who would seduce soldiers, or they would be spies and things like that. And even on the radio... Who's that lady on the radio? Tokyo something, you know.
Tokyo Rose.
Tokyo Rose, yeah. They would have a lady on the radio who would be preaching to the American citizens and American soldiers in English, of course, not in Japanese. This is Tokyo Rose, you know. Like that. So people were just like, some soldiers, I guess, were like a little bit enamored by the whole thing. So this is constant. So as far as the Vedic system, another example we can give is that of Shantanu. Shantanu was by the Ganges River, and Ganga Devi came out, and he just like was enamored completely by her, and he ultimately promised, if she would agree to get married, that he would never have any arguments with her, never disagree with her, and then she ended up killing their kids, you know, seven of the kids. So you see this bewilderment is there. Now, okay, I just want to make it very clear, it's not the lady's fault, unless she happens to be Delilah, but anyway. But the idea is the man, because the man wants to enjoy. So this love, let's say, why does someone get attracted? Let's analyze this. Why does someone get attracted to the eyebrow or the, you know, smile or like that? It's not the fault of the person who has the eyebrows or the beautiful smile. Although, I remember years ago, the brahmacharis used to always blame the ladies for their own attraction to them. I mean, maybe the ladies go out of the way and do things, you know, like wave their eyebrows or something. But, you know, it's really not their fault. It's the fault of the person, the man wants to enjoy them. You know, it's like blaming a fancy car for your spending all your money or taking out a loan and putting yourself in difficulty for buying it. You know, the reason I spent $80,000 for a Mercedes and ruined my whole family life, because now my family doesn't have food to eat, is it's the fault of the Mercedes. They just made such a nice car, you know, that it forced me to buy it. Right? I said, you can't blame a Mercedes for your buying it or not being intelligent. You can't blame the computer for your buying it. You can't blame, you know, so it's like that. It's that you want to enjoy, so therefore you become a victim. But the victim, the responsibility for your becoming a victim is yourself, your own responsibility. And not the fault of the attractive sense object. You know, the pizza made me do it, or the devil made me do it, or, you know, it's like that. You know, I just can't resist, like if someone puts pizza in front of you or someone puts whatever it is that you're attracted to. So you have to, in other words, you have to take responsibility for controlling your senses. And that's a hard one. And that's perhaps the most heroic thing. And we're not just talking about circumstances where things are attractive. In many cases, it's harder to control the senses when there's something negative happens. Like when people criticize you, or someone even beats you, or does things that are, there's a tremendous disaster. I mean, that's probably even harder. You know, controlling your anger. Let's say someone says something to you, or criticizes you, or passes on a rumor about you, or steals something from you, or whatever. I mean, that's really hard. You know, dealing with people who, let's say, you would consider to be your enemies. It's very hard to deal with that particular, like, you know, vacho, vegam, manasakrota thing. So all these things are vegams, or pushings. So one has to be a hero, one has to be able to resist these pushings. I mean, even in spiritual life, I was thinking about this yesterday, that, you know, of course, Prabhupada has given us everything. But sometimes we find people leave Prabhupada's society, and because they're thinking that something is more enjoyable outside, or they can get something that they haven't gotten in Prabhupada's society, or because, you know, people were mean to them in Prabhupada's society. So they leave. So even in spiritual life, you have this tendency. What was that word I used yesterday? It's sort of like in a, even it's especially an American tendency that the tendency to think of oneself. I forget the exact word I was using yesterday, but to think of an opportunist. That's it. That's the word. That we tend to be opportunists, whether it's spiritually or materially. I mean, especially the American culture lends itself, Western culture, not just Americans, lends itself to spiritual opportunism or material opportunism. I mean, just like, for example, if the sociologists have analyzed in America that the most popular type of religion is called the elective religion. Elective religion means basically you pick whatever you want from any religious tradition and you just mix it all. And many churches are actually teaching in that way. That, like I was just looking at some videos of some famous minister who has a mega church, big mega church, and he's pretty much taking anything that might be considered sectarian out of his sermons. And it's just like mostly feel-good stuff, you know, empowerment type of preaching. It's really interesting. One devotee sent it to me and said, this is how we should preach. And I said, you know, no. You become more powerful or more popular, you know, just like empowerment. You have it in you. You can conquer the world. You should do this. You know, so basically, you know, this opportunism is there, which is basically the mood of exploitation of this material energy, whether it's exploitation of someone else or exploitation of in the environment or even in the enjoying spirit within religion. So I was thinking about, you know, why do people leave Prabhupada's society? And we're not talking about people who are spiritually weak. That happens sometimes. We understand that. That's not a problem. I mean, it's a problem, but it's not something that I'm going to get into, you know, and heavy people out because they just happen to be a little spiritually weak. But why do people leave Prabhupada's society? It's because of this opportunistic concept that we have in the Western world. And I was thinking also that's why people, to a large extent, you know, don't stay in their married lives or stay loyal to each other, because this concept of loyalty, you know, sticking to one's obligations and one's family or one's whatever it is, guru, It's not so much ingrained in our consciousness in America. It's just like if some opportunity comes that where we can enjoy ourselves materially or spiritually more, I mean, generally we'll go for it, isn't it? This is like the story here. You know, King Paranjana was already a hero, but the opportunity came, you know, just like this girl came. And, you know, just wiggling her way around. And he just, when opportunity knocks, you got to take it, you know. Instead of thinking, you know, what is best or what is my obligations in life? What are my obligations in life? I mean, even Dushmanta, let's go back to another big story. Dushmanta came in contact with Shakuntala. You all know the story of Shakuntala? And basically, I mean, she was a qualified girl, but he didn't really know that in the beginning because she was just living there in the forest. I mean, he didn't even get a chance to meet her father. You know the story? Her father, actually, Kanva Muni was acting as her father. Her actual real father was Vishwamitra Muni, and her real mother was Menaka. So Menaka and Vishwamitra Muni, they had, you know, they fell in love, whatever it is. And Vishwamitra Muni felt real remorseful after he had the kid. And, you know, no sense of obligation. That's another point. You know, you had this poor little girl there, and Menaka, and they just dropped her off in the forest. The Shakuntala. Shakuntala basically means she was taken care of by the vultures. Can you imagine that? I mean, it sounds like America again. Not that I'm criticizing America. But anyway, so, I mean, even you have ladies in the Western world, you know, they fall in love with someone else, and just because their kids are interfering with the loving relationship, they put their kids in a car and take the brakes off and let the car coast into a lake and watch their kids drown. This has happened. I mean, that's the times they get caught. So, anyway, so Shakuntala was born and she was being taken care of by the vultures, and Maharaj Dushmanta, he saw her, and even without waiting for her father to come back, you know, getting permission, you know, he just like, I guess, chanted Om. I think that's how the story goes in the Bhagavatam. And then they had a relationship, and then little Bart was born. Anyway, that was it. He wasn't born immediately. But because he didn't consider, like, what sort of family she was from or anything like that, in the beginning, he was very reluctant to accept her and the child. So he didn't really consider things. He just acted in an opportunistic way. That was the point I'm making. He acted in an opportunistic way. Although, ultimately, things came out well by the grace of Krishna. Because she came back. She came to the kingdom with her kid and said to the king, Dushmanta, you know, I am your lawfully wedded wife and this is your son. And then, and in the beginning, Dushmanta was thinking, boy, I really made a mistake. You know, and he denied anything to do with, that he had anything to do with her. He just said, who is this lady? I've never seen her before. And then eventually there was a voice from the sky, etc., that actually allowed him to accept her back. So it's very, that's an opportunistic thing. I was just pointing out this opportunism. So let's get back to the point. So people leave ISKCON when they know that it's obvious. That's like I was hearing Dr. Chirumaraj's offering to Prabhupada, and you know, the first point he made, you know, is that we stay within ISKCON. And people ask, you know, why does that mean stay within ISKCON? Is it because we just have to, like, be attached to an institution? No. Or because we're so insecure, you know, we can't think for ourselves. No, it's out of love for Prabhupada. I mean, love and loyalty. Let's use that word, loyalty. I mean, without loyalty, I don't think you can have love. Like the ultimate loyalty is described by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the last verse of the Shikshashtaka, right? Krishna, you may crush me by your embrace. You may leave me brokenhearted by not being present before me, but you're completely free to do anything and everything, and you always remain my worshipful Lord, unconditionally. So we don't really have this concept of loyalty. To me, I mean, at least at least my training was, it's important to be loyal. But in America, you know, you get, like your parents, they get old, and you don't take care of them. You don't take care of them until they die. Sometimes you make them die, so you don't have to take care of them. So there's not that concept of, this is my mother, this is my father. In India, traditional India, there is that concept. This is my mother, this is my father. You know, this is an unbreakable obligation. Also, you know, in relationship to the spiritual masters like that too. And all aspects of society. I mean, I'm not going to comment whether, you know, materially it helps one. Sometimes materially it doesn't help one. Sometimes spiritually, it doesn't help one. Like we have times in India where, in certain states of India, where someone wants to join the Hare Krishna movement and the parents say, no, you're killing me, you can't join. And the child says, all right, I can't join. We had some instances here where there was, one of the devotees was, the guilt was stimulated so much that the person committed suicide because of the guilt of the parents, the obligation to the parents, and the desire to be a devotee, and then there's such a conflict there between the two. So I'm not saying it's always good spiritually, but I'm just making the point of this, the obligation and loyalty that one has. So as Bhakti Churumar stated yesterday in this nice offering, that the first point is, one remains with it. ISKCON and cooperates and works under the structure, the management structure that Prabhupada gave. Even though sometimes it may be difficult, still, there's a question of loyalty. I mean, it's not taking care of your parents when they're old is difficult too, isn't it? Because you may have to do all sorts of physical things to help them. So still, the sense of obligation is there. And that sense of obligation is the opposite of that opportunistic mentality. And somehow or other, we have to actually imbibe this mood of obligation, loyalty. And this will make us happy. It's not an artificial thing. I have to do this, I have to do that. It's just like, this is part of our personality. It should be part of our personality, a high-class, cultured personality. And therefore, you find persons who, because of this loyalty, this dedication, sticking to their principles and vows, were able to withstand the allurement of Krishna's material energy. And of course, you have like Arjuna and Urvasi. That's one particular example. Like Urvasi, I mean, she was much more beautiful than this girl being described here. Urvasi was directly created by Krishna. You can't get better at having an architect for a lady. Not an architect for a lady, an architect who creates a lady. So the story is that Narayana and Rishi were there meditating, just minding their own business. And Indra came, along with Springtime and Cupid and all those other nice people, to try to allure Narayana and Rishi. And they were unsuccessful. But Narayana Rishi was able to create this Urvasi from his mystic powers, or using his spiritual powers, actually. And he said to the demigods, you tried with all these dancing girls to allure me, so I want to give you something, a nice present to take back with you. And that was Urvasi. And Indra can hardly live without Urvasi. I mean, when he doesn't see Urvasi there, there's that whole story of Karuruva, when he didn't see Urvasi there, he was starting to feel separation, a moment's separation, like 12 years or more. So, he brought her back, and poor Karuruva was bereft. So, she was extremely gorgeous. That's an understatement. I mean, one eyebrow would have been enough to knock anyone off his feet. Even if he just had a picture of the eyebrow without the rest of the body. a person would faint just to have it. They put a wall poster in the dormitories of an eyebrow. So she became interested in Arjuna because he was a hero too. He was there in the heavenly planets learning also dancing and learning so many things, getting weapons. And she just went to his door and she said, you know, I'm in love with you, basically. Not so many words like that. And he was able, because he understood the culture, your mother. You're like my mother, because she's like the whole mother, because she was married to Pururava. And then and Arjuna is called a Puru, means he's a descendant of Pururava. Actually, sometimes that you'll find that statement in the Mahabharata, Puru, instead of Kuru. So she said, he said, you know, you're just like, you're the mother, your great, 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 great grandmother. And she said, yeah, that's for earth people. You know, in the heavenly planets, it doesn't matter. You know, these state principles don't matter. You know, we're free, you know. Upstarts are free. They just do anything within reason. And Arjuna just refused it. As a result, that's another point about lust. It turns to anger very quickly. She got very angry and cursed him to become eunuch. So the point is that his attachment to principles and loyalty, I mean, I'm sure as a Kshatriya there was some attraction there. I mean, he certainly was not aloof from attraction. I mean, there's so many stories, like when Ulupi pulled him down in the water. You know, he was bathing one day in the Ganges, and all of a sudden he found himself, like, pulled down by a beautiful girl. And then, you know, obviously, then he couldn't restrain it. I mean, he could have restrained himself, but it was dharmic. In other words, he accepted things because they were dharmic. He had this principle of loyalty, sticking to dharma. And even she had to convince him that it was all right because he had taken a vow to become like a brahmachari for, I think it was 12 years or 14 years, because he had intruded upon Draupadi and Yudhisthira when they were together, and they had made that promise that, you know, that anyone intruded. He intruded to get weapons. You know, there was a good reason. So, but he had to be convinced even that it was all right. And the conviction was, the convincing him was that that vow of brahmachari was only in relationship to Draupadi. You know, just like a limited brahmachari vow. Only relationship to one woman. Anyway, he was convinced, but he wouldn't have done anything had it not been dharmic. Arjuna never did anything that was not dharmic. So that's the whole point, attachment to dharma, the principles of loyalty, and these things protect us from the attacks of the attractive material energy, no matter what that aspect of the material energy is. It's a very important lesson. And of course, then Haridas Thakur is another example. That's the final example I'll give today. That Haridas Thakur just said, you know, I got to finish my rounds. I got to chant. And of course, he was also thinking of the compassion towards the prostitute, or compassion towards Durga Devi, who tested him in a similar way. It's just the obligation. You know, these are just not words we have in our vocabulary. Obligation, loyalty, things like that. You stick with someone, or you stick with it. So in ISKCON, we should feel like that with Prabhupada. All of us, no matter who we're initiated by, this is our obligation. It's our loyalty. It's our identity. That's how far it goes, loyalty, identity. You know, this is Prabhupada. Prabhupada, you know, no matter what. Whether we get kicked or whether we get beaten or whatever. You know, this is what we do. Okay? And I had a nice talk with someone about that yesterday afternoon, about loyalty. So any questions or comments? We got about 1 minute left. No? Everybody still sleepy? Yes.
Such a feeling of like family, family, staying with the monks at the boat.
Well, there are opportunities for immersion training. I mean, it may not be that one lives in the temple for our congregation, that is, but there are seminars, retreats being held. I mean, that has the same effect. I mean, in fact, it's actually even more effective in one sense because, you know, if one lives all the time, one becomes complacent. But when you have like a retreat or a seminar or a summer camp, it really, you know, it's life-changing. It's transformational. So one can do something like that instead of remaining all the time in the temple.